Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. Woo! We barely made it tonight.
Oh, you're teasing.
We're having some technical problems. I have no internet connection, so Kate is the official host of the show tonight.
So call it, because I want my switchboard lighting up tonight. I want an active evening.
Ooh, that scared me when I got on. It said, your show will go live in 5 seconds.
And yeah, and then I saw your number on there. I'm like, oh, I think I'm supposed to let her on.
Well, phew. Let's see if I can quit breathing fast. I need some CPR here, but that's okay. Tonight's topic, we're going to finish our series of shows about great toys that we use to target language and language delayed toddlers. And tonight we're going to talk about early pretend. And I think I skipped all that introductory stuff that I usually say. Are you there?
Yes, I'm listening.
Okay. I thought, oh, no, now I don't even have a phone connection. Ah!
No, you're there. You're on.
Okay. Early pretend toys. Do you want to just talk about this for a little while, Kate, and let me regain my composure?
Okay. I think you warned me this afternoon as I was shopping and not getting ready for the show that you wanted me to say something about pretend play. And that, to me, is kind of the always the end goal for all the kids that we see. And since we deal with very young children, 0 to 3, some of our kids get there very nicely and some don't. But we always work towards that. And in my mind, I think of it as a more more advanced, more what?
It is more cognitively advanced,
yes,
to be able to do pretend play rather than just like the things that we've talked about in the last few weeks, cause and effect. All those ball toys, all the things that we've talked about until now really are lower functioning kinds of play when you look at a child from a cognitive development perspective.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Well, I was thinking back. I thought I might be able to get some nice definition or explanation before the show, but I didn't. But thinking back as a student myself, getting a master's in early childhood ed, the term that came with hand in hand with pretend play was theory of mind. And the best I could do as a graduate student to really understand that was to say that a child is, once they have that cognitive concept called theory of mind, it means that they are able to take on another person's role or another person's ideas. And so a child might play the mommy or the doggy or the baby or the, but they kind of have to be able to isolate, this is me and this is somebody else. And that's a pretty advanced concept for young children, and as I said, not all of our kids get there. As much as we try and get them there, it doesn't always work. But
right. Mm-hmm. You know, and usually, what age range do you think that happens at? I think it's about 24, between 24 and 36 months is when it truly, truly develops.
I would agree.
Yeah. But the earliest pretend play that we want to talk about tonight, really on my checklist, begins at about 15 to 18 months. And it's playing with dolls and pretending to feed a doll, pretending to give a doll a drink, and pretending to make a doll go to sleep. Those are all the very earliest kinds of pretend play that we like to see with children. Do you have that specifically on the test that you use for children when you evaluate them?
I'm going to grab the Hawaii Early Learning Profile Assessment Tool, because they don't really call it pretend play on the help.
Uh-huh. I have it on the Rossetti Infant Toddler Language Scale, and now that I'm thinking about it, it might be 12 to 15 months, but it's 12 to 15 months or 15 to 18 months, and it's in the play section. And I love the Rossetti because it mostly is a language test. It's an overall communicative function test with a child, and it looks at a child's how they understand language, how they use language, which would be the pragmatics, and then later how expressive language, how they would use words and gestures or signs. And then there's also a section on there about interaction and attachment, and boy, have we talked about how important that is to language development. And then there's also a section on play. And I believe that feeding a doll, pretending to give a doll a drink, and making the doll go to sleep are all on there at about that age level. And I know that those things in particular are on the preschool language scale 4 and at about that same age range, about the 18-month level.
And here's what I consider to be the equivalent to that on the help. They call it symbolic play with realistic props. Uses small broom to sweep, cloth to wipe. So, you know, you give them a baby bottle and you say, give the baby a drink, and they stick it in their little mouths. And, of course, we always animate that real nice so that they make it more fun. But, and they don't pretend play, engages in simple make-believe activities. That's 24 to 30 months. But to me, that implies, their examples is like they have a they play doctor, or they might have a pretend birthday party.
Right.
And that's, again, a more elevated kind. They don't just feed the baby and put the baby to bed.
Right.
They're kind of pretending, and that's much higher level to me.
Right. Me too, and I would agree with that. But certainly by that latter half of 1, early 2, we really want to see that coming in children because, again, that lets us know that their cognitive development's moving along. And really, and gosh, we have this talk all the time, unless your cognition is really moving along, your language is not going to move along. It makes you so mad when examiners get it wrong, and they might score a child's receptive language really, really low, but then score their cognition as age-appropriate. And, you know, I always feel like that those things go hand in hand. So it really looks funny to us, or vice versa. If they score a child, which has happened to us lately, they'll score a child's cognition really low but say that he has age-appropriate language skills. And you think, how in the world can that be? How can you not cognitively have moved along enough to not have reached those basic milestones, but then your language be way above that? Because before a child is 3, language, receptive language, and cognition really is very, very closely linked. And even experts or people on the educational side don't even feel like you should really separate a child's cognition and language before they're 3, evidenced by not wanting to give a child an IQ test, a true IQ test, nonverbal IQ, until after they're 3, because they feel like that's so closely linked until you're developmentally that age. Does that make sense?
It certainly does to me. Yeah, we see those discrepancies often, and I think probably more often we see examiners say cognitive skills are age-appropriate, language skills, both receptive and expressive, are significantly delayed. Sometimes we see the other, but, and yeah, that can be frustrating. It's like, does that really make sense?
Yeah, and that's what we say when we go to these meetings, when we go sit in these IEP meetings, say the school system has done that, and we say, how does that even make sense to you clinically? But we say it in a much nicer way than that.
Yeah, because we just think it that way.
We call each other after the meeting and say, you'll never believe what that school system said. But really, I mean, I really have a hard time with someone saying that a child's receptive language skills are so delayed, but cognitively they're okay. And they may be looking at stuff like, you know, they're able to really match an object with a picture or do some simple problem solving. But when you really start breaking those things down, cognition and receptive language are how a child understands. So many of the same items are on cognitive tests and on receptive language tests. So, again, I feel like that when an examiner's done that, they haven't teased that apart like they needed to. And I always feel like that's really an evaluator error, not really. I just cannot remember a case in my career where I felt like that was a real accurate measure of a kid's abilities.
I would tend to agree, but it's a common thing that we see.
Right, especially in our early intervention program, and even more so when they're 3 and transitioning to the schools. Okay, so early pretend play. And if you'll remember from the last couple of weeks, this article that we're using to reference this is from my website, teachmetotalk.com. It's in the Great Toys category. We're about halfway through the article, and these are things that we recommend when children are ready to start to do early pretend play. And again, I think dolls are the very best way to start this. Some dads absolutely freak out when they see me bringing the baby doll in for their little boys. But you can do this kind of play with a stuffed animal, with any, you can do it with a G.I. Joe, you know, it does not matter, just any.
I know
kind
we've
of
both done it with Thomas the Train on more than right. one occasion. If that's what your child is obsessed about, then use Thomas the Train. But
right, and you really want to try to think about having your child duplicate activities that you would do every day. And again, that would be eating, drinking, going to sleep, taking a bath. And once children have started really getting into that kind of pretend play, you might, you know, pretend like you're going to the store, or pretend like you use the example, having a birthday party or going to the doctor. Those are kinds of more advanced play themes. But the very basic stuff is just to start with things that your child can do every day. And again, this is an excellent way to teach language, because you're not just going to have the item there, or the little character. You're going to get all the accessories that go with it. And you can find at Walmart or Target or Kmart lots of little baby doll and baby doll accessories kind of in a kit for, gosh, 10 or 15 bucks, don't you think, Kate?
Mm-hmm.
Where you can buy a doll with a spoon, you know, a spoon and a fork and a cup and a bottle and a bowl and a diaper and a brush, and just the accessories with that are what you really want to use to teach your child to start to do some of those kinds of play things. And I use this with, I use this kind of play almost every day, don't you? I mean, several times a day, every day.
Pretty much, unless the child's very young or very delayed. Some form of it I pretty much try and work into most sessions, yes.
Yeah, and you want to really, you know, give your, again, you're giving your child cues. You're saying, oh, the baby is so hungry. What should we do? She's hungry, she's hungry. And you have the bottle sitting there. You have the little bowl out. You have the spoon out. And, you know, you might say, let's feed her. Let's give her some bites. And then if your kid doesn't reach out and get the spoon, then you might reach out and get the spoon and model. And I always make a big deal about stir, stir, stir with my spoon in the bowl. And I'm stirring. And that's on my test in play, too. Is that on yours? Really early, imitate stirring with a spoon.
You know, I don't think it is specifically.
It's on mine, and I think that probably is at 12 to 15 months. And I remember when I first started working, not really believing that would happen and thinking, oh, I'm going to just, you know, try that out with some regular kids. And, you know, I've talked about this before, you know, doing all these things with my own children. Boy, they got the Rosetti administered to them like every 2 weeks, I think, when they were little. And I would say, can he really do that? Is this really realistic? And sure enough, they could. But that's a really, really early one, too. And, you know, and then that makes me think about typically developing babies. You know, they're in the kitchen playing in the bowls. They're loving those bowls when you set them out when mom is cooking and trying to take the spoon and pretending to stir. And kids can do that pretty darn early. So if you have an 18-month-old or a 24-month-old who's not interested in that, you know, that should be a big ding, 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 ding in your brain. Gosh, I've got to get some of these really basic play skills going, because that really, again, tells me that cognitively things aren't where they need to be.
Yes, the closest to that is engages in simple relational play, combines two different but related objects.
Yeah, so, and so that would be like a bowl and a spoon.
And that's 9 to 12 months.
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, that's such an early thing. But when you're working on that with your child, you know, again, you're going to say, oh, the baby's so hungry. Let's feed her. Let's give her some bites. And you were talking about how to make that more animated. You know, we both go, or some little action where we're pretending to make that sound effect with the baby. And, again, that's another way to get a vocalization from a child who's not maybe ready to use words yet, but they are ready to start to imitate some vocalizations. And, you know, we almost always are going to encourage that. Again, even we would love to get the word, but if we can't get a word, we're going to settle for a little sound effect like that as well. And for drinking, you know, I do the, I don't know, Kate, you may have a different sound for that. But that's,
I'm chuckling because the guy, a little boy we share, was doing that to me, and then, ah.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, I know where he got that.
Lara has been modeling that for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I, you know, do those, because you can get those kinds of things from young kids, and again from kids that when you're first starting to get this pretend play, those are the kinds of things that really hook them in, that make them want to stay and play with you.
Yeah, that's what they, where you see the twinkle and they laugh and they want to imitate it, and
Right, right. But comprehension-wise, or how much a child understands, again, you can get tons of good work in that area with these kinds of play things too, because you're giving them the verbal direction, then you're waiting to give them a chance to follow through, then you're doing hand-over-hand assistance or showing and helping him complete those little directions or commands that you've given him with, you know, with regard to, you know, let's make the baby go to sleep, and you know, you've set the, you've talked about, oh, let's get the baby's bed or a little blanket or whatever you have, and you're putting it on the floor, and then you're telling him again, oh, the baby's sleepy, the baby wants to go to sleep. And then after the child has had a few seconds, if you don't feel like he knows what to do, you grab your child's hands and you help him put the doll down. And I certainly violate the whole back to sleep thing. I'm always putting baby's face down when we're going to sleep. And then I say, oh, we need to pat the baby's back. And again, that will give your child an opportunity to follow through with that really basic command. And if they don't do it when I first ask them to do that, then I might model that for them or do it myself. And I always say, pat, 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 pat when I'm doing that. And then, I ask the child to do it again. And if he doesn't do it, I've told him, I've shown him, and then I'm going to help him do it. I grab his hand and help him pat, 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 pat. And those kinds of commands sometimes are the very first things that I think that I get children to consistently do without my model once we've done it several sessions in a row. Don't you find that to be true?
Yes, although I've told you, I don't think I play as effectively with babies as you do. I think I need to do, well, I got your video, so I'm going to be watching that. Some of what you're talking about, Laura, does kind of coincide with your Teach Me to Listen and Obey.
Right.
DVD, I call them all videos. That's how old I am.
Whatever.
But anyway, she's just produced the two series of Teach Me to Listen and Obey. And I always say I think you get better results with this
with
sort
babies.
Of play than, yeah. And I really, do you, is there much of that on there?
There's a lot of that on there. It's in Teach Me to Talk, the DVD, too. But there's a lot of it on there on Listen and Obey 1, and I think there's some on there on 2. But I really use this a lot with younger toddlers or with toddlers who really can't sequence a lot of actions in play yet. So, again, mm-hmm. those are going to be the kids who aren't quite 2 or have just turned 2, or even older children who developmentally are still kind of at that single word and following very basic commands. Now, I do use baby dolls a lot with older little girls who really have gotten into the whole baby thing, and you can do tons of great 2-step commands with that. And another thing I do with children when they're a little bit older with dolls, too, is really work on action words or verbs with that. And, you know, I'm saying, make your baby jump, 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 jump. You know, make your baby cry. I know you do the cry thing
mm-hmm.
all the time with kids, because you'll say, if we share a client, you'll say, oh, he really liked it when I made the baby cry. And remember our one little girl, she would laugh when you made the baby cry, but she wouldn't laugh when I made the baby cry. And finally we talked about you were using a different kind of cry than me. My pretend cry is, oh, you know, wah, wah, wah. Or maybe I'm getting it wrong. Maybe I'm echoing your kind of cry now.
I think but that's poor Brian. Yeah. What's your normal one?
I don't know. I think I switched to that one now. I think I used to do.
I think you did more of a boo-hoo.
Yeah.
And I did more of a squeal. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think I switched to wah, wah, wah after you told me that that little girl that we're talking about liked your cry better. So I think I just assimilated that one. But yeah.
You can tell we compare notes a lot.
Yeah.
Can't you?
And we don't share that many kids, but
no,
a
but
handful
when
that we do. Yeah.
Which is good, because we can always benefit from the other people's success. We're not proud. We will take anybody's idea if it works. So
absolutely, absolutely. And sometimes it is as simple as thinking, okay, what about that? Why did she laugh when you made the baby cry? Or what about that really made her want to imitate that? That how did I do that differently? And that's something you have to explain to parents sometimes too. Is, well, you're trying to do it, but look at the difference between when you do it and when I do it and see the reactions. Or sometimes I'll watch a parent with a kid and I'll think that's why that works with them, because they're doing this little part differently. And so you do as a therapist and even as a parent who's really trying to so analyze everything that you're doing, if you're not getting the same response and the same successes as your therapist gets, you know, that's one thing to do is really kind of take, I guess in school we would have called that a task analysis.
Yeah.
Really analyze how did she play differently? What did she say that's different from what I said? Is she talking more than me? Is the therapist saying more than I say? Is she saying less than I say? Is she more animated? Is she just emphasizing single words and I'm talking in long paragraphs? You know, all kinds of things. Is she doing more sound effects than words? I mean, those are all things that I have to consider when I think a therapist is getting or a parent is getting a different response from me or vice versa.
And Laura, way back when I was just the little grasshopper still and you were my earliest and only mentor probably, the best advice I think, and I remind myself of this often, you had given me some idea that I thought was great, and I tried to implement it, and it didn't really work very well. And I told you later, Laura, it's not working. And you said, you need to ratchet it up. And
I always say that I say that, and I don't really know
you
that
did.
I
can't remember what little trick you had taught me over the phone, and I hadn't seen it. And then I tried to do it, and your point was you're not being goofy enough. You're not being
right.
Playful enough. You're not being loud enough. And I did, in fact, I can't remember if it was playing with the microwave or there was some specific thing that you had told me about. And I just did it, but I didn't do it with enough enthusiasm. And
right.
You said ratchet it up, and lo and behold,
yes,
it worked. Yeah.
And when I have a child that I feel like that I can't reach or I'm not connecting with, before I walk in the door, I think, okay, here it comes. It's showtime.
Yeah.
You know, and you really have to think, what was my affect level last week? If I was at a 6, I'm going to an 8. If I was at an 8, boy, get ready, parents, because I'm going to a 10. You know, and that, again.
Put your earmuffs on. I'm coming in
the
door.
You know, and sometimes it's not even really with the how loud you are.
No.
It's just your how much you're smiling, how much you're right in their face, how much you're going to be physical with them as far as, and I don't mean, you know, constantly holding them or, but, you know, you're going to tickle, you're going to, if they're really movement kids, you're going to run around a little bit, you're going to chase them. Again, you're going to get up to really pull those kids into wanting to interact with you.
Really,
but usually,
exaggerated, yeah.
Yeah, real exaggerated. And that playfulness, that's the very first strategy on the Teach Me to Talk DVD. And if you haven't had a chance to look at that yet, look at the ad clips for that. It's under the DVD section, and I think the little ad line is like discover the best or proven way or something like that to teach your toddler to talk. And click on that, and you can go down the ad copy in the first video clip that you see is a playfulness, and I'm playing with a little girl just with a ball toy, but you can see it's really over the top, and that's how you want to be, especially with kids who don't routinely connect with you. And by connect, I mean they're not looking at you, their eyes aren't twinkly, they're not really with you. They kind of seem like they're in their own little worlds or doing their own little things. And again, you want to achieve this connection with any kind of toy that you play with a kid, with those earlier toys that we talked about, and especially with these early pretend things that we're talking about this week. All right, baby dolls, we've already kind of talked about the verbs that we do with those. And again, this is from the article's Recommended Toys and Techniques for Targeting Language. You can, you know, of course, name all the accessories that you've played with. You want to do all the action words, you know, wash, eat, sleep, drink, jump, walk. I make babies dance all the time. I swing them. I make them go night-night, all those little action words that you would do that you would want your child to understand. And you can have your child have a doll, and you have a doll, and you say, look, my baby can dance. Can your baby dance? And then after a few times that you've modeled those action words for a few weeks, and the next time you don't do it with the doll. You just wait until he has the doll, and you say, I want to see your baby jump, or I want to see your baby walk. And you sit there, and you're not doing it. And when your child can make that action happen, then you know, gosh, yes, we've achieved it. He really, really understands it. And lots of those examples are in Teach Me to Listen and Obey 1. And there are video clips of that on the website as well if you want to take a look at how to do that. And then prepositions or location words are there. You know, you can put the baby on the table. You can put the baby under the table. You can put the baby in a box. You know, all those things you can teach with the doll. And don't forget about the descriptive words, too. Size concepts. Kate, when's that on your cognitive test?
Well,
I have it at about 30 minutes, I think, and I'm just doing all this from memory. But I think it's about 2.5 that children really learn the difference between big and little, or large and small, if you're that formal. And do you say big and little?
Big and little.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can also do those.
Small,
those.
Maybe. I think I used tiny before small, actually, for some reason. But big and little is my standard. Get the big one. Get the little one.
Right. And in Listen and Obey 2, there's a big, long section on that, too. And I use those, again, I use dolls with this because you can get a big and little spoon. You can get different size dolls. You can get different size hats. You can get the big bottle and the little bottle. Again, you can teach lots and lots and lots of different kinds of concepts just with the accessories that you use. And the great thing about this is, too, is kids don't really know, gosh, I'm learning size concepts today. They just think you're playing and that you're doing early pretend stuff.
The only time it really names it is 25 to 30 months, uses size
yeah.
words.
Yeah, and that would be when it's online, too. So that's
mm-hmm.
consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So about two and a half.
Okay, I'm the switchboard operator tonight, which is, you know, a big deal because I've never done this before. So I'm going to say, since we have 33 minutes left, just in case there are live listeners who would like to call in, and since I'm the operator, I can say, I don't even care if it's related. I just like callers. The call-in number is 718-766-4332. Call in. Ask a question related to speech and language development.
All right. Okay, the next kind of early pretend thing is something that we both play with all the time, and that would be plastic food. My favorite kinds of plastic food sets are ones that have pieces that Velcro together, and you use the pretend knife, and you actually cut the food. I can keep a kid doing that sometimes for the better part of an hour because that's a lot of fun. You can get the more expensive brands from therapy catalogs. Always wait until Walmart, or I think Target has kind of a wooden set right now, but I don't like wooden ones as much as I do the plastic because I don't feel like the wooden ones, you know, I'm always washing them with wipes, and sometimes I just feel like I get that plastic cleaner. Who knows? I may be deluding myself, but all those plastic food things, and if you buy the giant set with, you know, 900 pieces of food, you'll probably have to pick out the ones that aren't as common, you know, asparagus, garlic. Those aren't, those kinds of foods are in there, but they're not the kinds of words that your 1, 2, and 3-year-olds would normally say. So I try to kind of go through those sets and cull out the ones that I think the kids would normally say. You can use, I try to use those with the babies all the time. You know, we're going to make the babies eat. But we, one of our favorite toys is the Cookie Monster. Why don't you talk about that Puff-a-Lump Cookie Monster, Kate?
Yeah, I don't know what it's, you know, it's another one of those kind of hard to find things. But it is a kind of a parachute cloth, squishy Cookie Monster, about the size of all those Elmo, you know, the Tickle Me Elmo series. But this is no batteries. It really is very simple. Just has a hole that opens for his mouth, and he comes with a couple cookies. But I use other things also, French fries and chips and bananas and all the things that kids generally snack on. But anyway, you stick it in his mouth, and then it, well, I always have to shake it to get it to fall into his backpack. And that shaking is a good one, huh? That's something
I'm doing.
I shared with Laura. She's learned a few things from me. But that's really all it is. It's so, so simple, and kids really love it. And, of course, I make a big deal when they go to eat it. I do my little Cookie Monster voice, which is very taxing on my vocal cords, but
which
I do it.
Which gives you vocal nodules, but we do it anyway.
I do it anyway because that's what they love. And then, again, make a big deal of the shaking and where to go and, oh, and, you know, have them try and label the things that we're feeding them. And so that's all it is. And I got I guess anymore, the only way to get them is probably on eBay. So, and I don't even know how you would find it. Parachute cloth, or
I think you, when you told me about it, and I've had mine for several years now, but you called it Puffalump Cookie Monster, and that's how I think I looked it up. But I could be wrong about that.
I don't know.
But it's really cool, again, because the kids, you can put the food in Cookie Monster's mouth, and then it really does disappear. And the first time you do it with kids, you can see their wheels turning like, where'd that go? And then you turn it around and open the backpack, and that's always a big light bulb moment. They can't believe that it's actually shown up again.
It is a cool, simple, easy toy. They did reissue them, and they were kind of like a vintage, classic, you know, Sesame Street toy, but seems like they were in and out before. And they even, I think they made them in like Elmo and Big Bird. And
oh, I would love to get an Elmo one. I think that would be really cute, but I've never seen those when I'm doing
They had them at KB Toys for a while. I mean, now they're out of business, so much for that tip. But they did shortly carry them briefly, and then they were gone. So.
Yeah. But it's a winner. Mm-hmm. The other thing I do with plastic food is use them in the pretend microwave, and that is one of our favorite toys of all time. And you can get that at Toys R Us, or you can get it at, I always like to buy it on the Walmart's line of toys. What's that called? I can't remember. But the cheap toy aisle is what you and I refer to it all the time. But it's about between 10 and 15 bucks, and it'll be a microwave. And this one definitely is in, I think it's in Teach Me to Talk, that DVD that you can see that me use that toy, and it's in Teach Me to Listen and Obey 1 and 2 because I use that all the time. But you put the plastic food in the microwave, and again, I let kids pretend like we're cooking bananas, we're cooking apples. Occasionally I'll have a mom say, you can't cook a grape, and I always shoot her a look like, work with me here, it really doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah.
Human it okay. He can say grape, and he likes grapes, and he wants to see it go around and around in the microwave, so work with me here, Mom.
Yeah.
So, or a dad is most usually who will kind of interject that. But you put it in, and I like to always have them tell me, open the door, and we put the food in, and then we close the door. And, again, this is a great expressive language task. You know, I have them say the phrases, or if we're working on them following directions, I'm telling them what to do. You know, open the door, put the banana in, close the door. And then I always say push a little button, then push the big button. I don't know what cues you give for that, because I think all of them have small buttons at the top, and you have to push one of those little buttons and then push the big start button at the bottom. Is that what you say?
Sometimes, I don't know. You know, I've toyed with that. What's a good thing to say? Sometimes I just say 1, 2, and try and get them to do the second one. I don't necessarily say big button and little button. Might have to change that. I'm going to think about that one.
I like it to do. I like doing that. And sometimes I think I have kids that may just cognitively be a little farther along than some of the kids that you're seeing and maybe doing that too. So it's a good thing for me to say. Or I might say, oh, this is pizza. Let's see if there's a button with pizza on it. I know that I've done that with some of my kids that are just apraxic, that, you know, cognitively and their receptive language is just excellent. So that's a good way to kind of slow them down and make them really look for those buttons. And then we have to push the big button. And the best part about the microwave is the light comes on and the little spinner spins. And I always say, cook, or with my kids that are really visual, my kids that are on the spectrum, I always say around, 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 because they like the spinning part. And then for kids who really are impulsive, who just want to jerk the door open, I think this is a great toy for teaching wait, 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 wait. Do you use that word when you're doing the microwave?
You know, more often than not, I hold it.
I do too, yeah.
And I do cook, 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 and I kind of rock back and forth with the microwave above my head because I have so many kids who want to rip the door open.
Well, I'm holding on for dear life, and you can probably see in the DVD my knuckles are white trying to hold that door closed before a kid can jerk it out of my hands.
Yeah.
That's kind of my,
and I have a lot of kids who do the cook, 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 cook.
And I have a lot of kids who go around, around,
and around,
around, around. Yeah. And so you watch the microwave, and then I say, listen for the beeps, listen, listen, listen.
Yeah.
And then the beeps start, and then I always say, it's ready. And that's usually how I can get a kid saying ready before they can say ready, set, go, because they will imitate that sing-songy, it's ready.
You know, I think that's what you taught me ratcheted up on.
Oh,
when I was, you were saying, you had just gotten that microwave, and you said, all my kids will say ready, and I said, mine won't, what am I doing wrong? I say it, and then you taught me.
Yeah, because you were going, it's ready!
Well, I was saying,
I'm just kidding.
Is it ready? But I wasn't doing, now I put my arms way up high and reach way up high and go, ready! You know, really loud and really big, and they like it, but I was just kind of saying, is it ready? You know, not enough.
Not enough
exaggeration and animation, and they just kind of looked at me like, I don't know if it's real, but now, I don't know, lady, but now they will reach up and go, ready, just like, but I think that is what you taught me that ratcheted up on, and you know what, that's a simple theory, but it works on almost everything, so
it does.
If I'm pitching a dud, I think, ratchet it up.
How can I make this more fun? What can I do to make this more exciting?
That's exactly right.
All right, so that's the microwave, and again, that is a winner. You can do a ton of
best
stuff.
$10 you could spend, I'd say. Really, early kids who really, it's kind of a stretch to get them to do pretend play, love it, and kids who are well into pretend play continue to love it. So.
They can, and I used it with one of my little guys today that we're really working on sequencing steps, and he's 3 and a half, but he'll want to play with something, but he doesn't always get the whole, you know, he's kind of has tunnel vision with play, and so what we're working on really is expanding what he'll do with certain things, and so he loves Cookie Monster and he loves the microwave, so we've put that together. We have to pick what food we're going to cook, and then we have to cut it, and then we have to cook it, and then we have to feed it to Cookie Monster, and then we have to get it out of his backpack, and sometimes we feed it to Mommy instead of feeding it to Cookie Monster. So we're not all always kind of, you know, we're building more flexibility into his play, too, because he really will get stuck kind of in the same play over and over and over. So that's one way to kind of introduce flexibility or introduce another step with a kid, you know, who likes to play with dolls or who likes to play with Elmo or something, and there's you think, gosh, I got to expand this. We've been doing the same thing for weeks and weeks and weeks. The microwave is a really good way to get kids to kind of kick that up a notch and go to the next level cognitively and language-wise for that. All right, we've got to go fast because we have.
Well, I'm the switchboard, so I'm not looking at the list. So let's go through them.
Okay. The next group of toys would be all the great pretend playground, pretend farm, pretend house, and again, Fisher-Price and, well, I guess Fisher-Price, that's mostly the company that I use. They've got tons of ideas where that's concerned, and again, you can use lots and lots of nouns or names of things. You know, just think about all the farm animals you would have, and then with the house, when you play with the little people house, you have the mommy and the daddy and the baby, and you have all the different rooms and all the different, you know, you can pretend like they're taking a bath, and you can pretend like they're eating, and you can pretend like they're watching TV, you know, all the things that your child would do in the course of a day. Okay, the next thing that I do a lot with this category is to get a pretend playground, and my favorite one isn't made anymore, of course. We always like these ancient toys, but it's a Fisher-Price set, and there's a slide, and it has a little sandbox in the middle and a little ladder for the that goes up to, like, the second story where the slide comes down, and you can hook a swing on there as well. And you have a Lovin' Family set that's like that, don't you?
Yeah, except they're separate pieces. It's a separate swing and a separate slide, and they, But and that's a little bit higher, a little less chunky, more realistic. Laura, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I have been kicked off of the switchboard. Do you suppose it matters?
I think that might mean we're off the air. Did it kick you off?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, I'll go back to my switchboard. It says something about a runtime error.
Johnny, I think we're kicked off the switchboard. Kate got kicked off. Does that mean we're off the air?
I don't know.
Well, we've never had that happen before, so I don't know if we should just blab on.
Well, how could we be talking?
Yeah, it has to be off if we're...
But I didn't call you, and you didn't call me.
Okay. But if we're kicked off the switchboard, Johnny, does that mean that it went down?
People are hearing me now.
Okay. All right. We're just going to keep going.
Okay.
Or we could just end the show. You just want to end the show?
Oh, wait. No, I think we're still here.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Screen came back.
It did?
Yep.
Okay, great. We're back on. Okay, but let's talk about this. With the little people or the set, again, this is a great way to work on receptive language, too. My favorite little thing to do with the Fisher-Price Playground thing is that I have all these other little characters that we've collected, and certainly you have sets like this too, Kate. Little Elmo, Little Dora, Diego, anything that a kid would like. You need to search high and low and find those little plastic characters. And again, you can make Dora go to the farm. You know, you can expand that farm play, you know, just by adding another character or two. I love to use different little characters with the playground, because again, you're going to make a kid pick who you're going to play with, and then you're going to target all those action words or verbs with the playground stuff. With my little playground, you know, I talk about that Dora gets, you know, in the swing and she's out of the swing. We go on the slide and slide down. We climb back up the ladder. So again, you can do tons of stuff language-wise just with those little pretend sets. You like poo toys, Kate.
I do have a lot of poo things, and I have a fair number of kids who are familiar with poo. I guess there's a poo show on that some kids watch, and if they didn't start out familiar with poo, I think it's the accessory pieces I like with it. But
right,
like you said, whatever the child, there's still some I'm starting to see a resurgence of Barney kids as of late.
I have, too. In the last 6 months, I'll have a lot of parents who've started saying, oh, he loves the Barney song, or mom will lapse into the I Love You song, and I think, boy, blast from the past. You know, that 10 years ago, that was
huge. It's coming back. Isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
And thankfully, I saved my original Barney set that I've had for 10 years. And, you know, to me, that would be, if you have a child who's really, really into Barney and you're working on some of these language things, it would be worth the $10 or $12 you'd have to spend to buy a little set of those related characters on eBay or on Craigslist, or, you know, because like Laura said, you can take that and use the farm set, or you can take that, even if you take the book that he won't look at and you make that slide, okay, great, because he's going to be interested because Barney and Baby Bop are doing it. So.
Right.
Meet him where he is and build on that.
Absolutely. And again, there are tons of examples on the DVDs with how to use those kinds of toys. The next set of toys are related to that, zoo animals. If you have a kid into dinosaurs, you know, gosh, you can get a pack of dinosaurs at Walmart or the Dollar Tree for $1 and make those dinosaurs do all kinds of things. I have a Rubbermaid full of sand that I like to play with dinosaurs. And again, if you have a little boy or a little girl who really like that, that's a great way to kind of keep all that contained. But dinosaurs and sand, and you can dig with spoons or get those little smaller shovels to use with that. That's a lot of fun, too. Toys R Us sells clean sand in bags. It's pretty cheap. So even if you have that during the summer and you think, oh, we really miss that, you can duplicate that kind of play in the winter with just a Rubbermaid container with a top, and then when you're done with it, put the top back on, slide it under the couch, and move on and pull it out for another day.
Yeah,
probably
okay. not the thing you want to let them play with alone, but that's a great time to work in some of these strategies that you talk on your website and in your DVDs on, you know, because they kind of need you because you're not going to let them hurl the sand across your kitchen, but if you're playing with them, then they can do it.
Right. Okay, the next set of toys, again, Thomas the Train. Boy, that has been popular for a long time now. I keep waiting for old Thomas to go out, but somehow he's still around.
The choo-choo boys. Yeah, I think that may be with us to the end of our careers anyway, Laura. I don't know.
I know. And last year, the year before, when we had all that lead scare, where I put my Thomas the Roundhouse up for a while, and that's like a little station, and it has four doors, and you can pull the bottom out and it attaches to a little circular track. I I've started playing with that again. I think I've even gotten a new one of those. But kids love that, and kids who are really into Thomas, oh my goodness, you could spend $1,000 trying to get all those accessories. But again, a great way to pull a child in who's hooked on one certain kind of toy or thing, and you can get tons of language time and play time as well in with Thomas. My favorite Thomas is called Carry Around Thomas, and it's in a little green case, and it has a wind-up Thomas, and I love it because it's so portable.
Take Along Thomas.
Okay, whatever. Maybe you're that's why I can't find it on the internet. Maybe I'll call it Carry Along.
Don't call it Carry Along. Call it Take Along.
Take Along.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why I can't find it, because I really need a new one. My trees are missing. I'm down to one fence. I've lost one of my horses. So I need a new one of those.
I've been looking for one for you at TJ Maxx, but they haven't had them.
Well, some parent told me that she got one over Christmas, or maybe it was back in the fall, at the train show that comes to the convention center. And there was just another one of those announced, and I had to really think, okay, am I really going to drive 45 minutes and pay $10 admission? I almost did it, but we had other things going on over the weekend, so I didn't get to do it, or chose not to do it. I mean, we were just too darn busy, but that's a great, great Thomas toy for kids who like that.
Nice and portable. That is why they call it Take a Long Time. It's just small, folds up, would fit in a mom's purse, or at least it would fit in my purse. I do carry a large purse, but it's small. And
it is small.
Nice.
I think it was.
Go ahead.
Well, I think it would be a great doctor's office toy, you know, something that would be novel that you wouldn't let your kid play with all the time, that you would just kind of take out whenever you needed something to really entertain him.
Right.
And you keep his full attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good one. It's probably not for under three because it does have some smallish parts, but as long as you're playing with them or they don't mouth things anymore, it's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I really won't do it with kids that still mouth because they try to eat those horses. They think they are gummy.
Kind of gummy.
They think they're fruit snacks, so they try to eat those. So, yeah, I've had mothers jump across the room to fish them out of little mouths a lot. So I've started to really be careful about the kids that we play with that with. Okay, the next set of toys would be early games, and our very favorite early game is actually the third one on this list, called Fishing Around, and it's a cute little game. Kate, who made that? Because I don't think you can get that anymore. I think that's Milton Bradley.
I think that's right. I just bought a replacement Fishing Around on eBay. No, on Craigslist. I was desperate. It does, you know, it's great. I used it endlessly, but it finally gave out. And I had seen it over the holidays at Toys R Us, and when I went to get my replacement, I mean, it broke, and I was, like, on my way to Toys R Us to get the replacement, and it's gone.
Yeah.
So I think Milton Bradley's right. Not 100% sure, but Fishing Around is the – and there are other forms of fishing games, and they're not nearly as good as Fishing Around.
Not nearly as good. And it has a little pond, for lack of a better word, and you put the fish on there, and they have magnets on them, and they actually look like they're swimming. They go around and around, and there's a slide, and depending on whether children call it a slide or some of my more advanced kids want to call it a bridge. But you use that. It comes with fishing poles. I don't use that with the younger kids. You know, the fish going around and around in a circle aren't enough to mesmerize them. But again, you can do requesting with it. If you have kids that are just absolutely hooked on colors, you can do those darn colors with it, you know, in there. And I have a little guy right now who's very, very apraxic, but boy, he has overlearned those color words. So, you know, I really can get tons of good two-word phrase practice with red fish, purple one, I got red, you know, I got green. So, again, we're getting tons of phrases, and I'm using colors with him because that's what he loves and what he can say. See, I use Fishing Around almost every day, too.
And that's why it was an emergency when mine went out. Yeah, I usually do matching colors with it. You know, I let them pick a color, and they put it down, and I say, oh, you got red. Oh, and then I give them a choice of two more. Get more red, see? And, you know, I'll show them. They don't get it, then I help them get the red. Of course, they commonly want to grab them both, but I only let them get the one that matches.
Right. And you can work on that with quantity, too. You know, get one fish or get two fish. Or kids who are have a little girl that's really into two, I need two. And so that's been a good way to kind of do it. I try to give her three, and then, you know, she laughs and says, two. So it's pretty funny. She's older. She's over three.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of a fun thing to do. Lucky Ducks is another game that I use a lot. Lucky Ducks, unfortunately, like fishing around. These are games that don't necessarily have off switches. So you will want to play with those with your kids, you know, and if you're like us and drive around all the time, you know, the Lucky Ducks and the fishing around, I can almost always hear one of those going off in the back of my car. But it's kind of same kind of concept. It's a cute matching game. I sometimes will match with that, but mostly, you know, I'm working on other things. I'm working on requesting. I'm working on, for Lucky Ducks, boy, I have those ducks. They're flying. They're drinking. They're sleeping. They're sliding. They're jumping. You know, those, you can just get lots and lots of receptive language practice with verbs or action words with this kind of game, too. And, again, I can get more sometimes with this kind of game and kind of subtly work it in than with a kid who kind of wants to do his own thing. There's an example in Listen and Obey, too, with one of my favorite little people, and he won't always do the things with the little ducks that I want him to do with Lucky Ducks, and he's a visual kid, so, again, that round and round piece, you know, he loves that, and I can get him to play with almost any toy that has that kind of visual component. But when we're putting toys away, he will almost always follow directions with that, and we're working on two-step directions right now, and so I could say, make the duck fly, and then make the duck, or give the duck a kiss, you know, and I can almost always get some two-part commands while we're cleaning up the toy with Lucky Ducks, and sometimes I can't get it any other way. And again, that's for kids who really don't like to be directed. Sometimes you can sneak those things in as you're cleaning up, or when it looks like it's just part of the game and not your sole focus for that game. Okay, another game I like is the newer version of Candyland, and it's not the version, you know, that our kids played with or that we played with, the board game. It's one that's made of a plastic castle and has a candy cane, and you can pull the candy cane, and then a different color shape will fall out, and you have little game boards, and you can match. But more often than not, I just put all the game boards out, and we match the shape of that. And again, I'm not into really making kids say triangle or octagon or whatever it is. You know, we're calling it the red one, the blue one, unless I happen to have a kid who's ready to kind of work, who's moving along cognitively and they really are ready to work on those multisyllabic words, or if I have a kid who just loves to match or do shapes, we might call them those words. Do you have that game, Kate?
I have not. I remember when you first got it and liked it, and I've looked at it and haven't done it.
Well, I bought mine on clearance, so I think it's getting kind of pricey now. It's close to $20.
I look for it on clearance, and by the time I never found it, it was always full price.
Yeah.
But if you like it, I might have to invest in that.
Well, and it's another great game if you have older siblings and you really want them to play too, or if you have a child who's turning three that you have to really work on taking turns. It is one that you can kind of control the turns, because you really could sit and hold the castle and then give it to just the kid whose turn it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, make your knuckles go white trying to hold on to it, not let the other kid get it until it's his turn. But I work on those, you know, my turn, your turn, I got it. You know, those kind of little phrases, too, really lend themselves well in these kinds of games, because, again, it's part of the game, and it's, kids don't usually get, you know, they're so excited about the game, they'll say it and they'll imitate you, and it's easier to kind of get that way, those kinds of phrases. The next group would be arts, fine motor, and sensory play toys. Play-Doh is a standard that I use. I don't use it all the time, but I'll go through periods where Play-Doh is in my car, and I might use that a lot, and I have a ton of accessories, you know, lots of cookie cutters that I've collected over the years. I always have a roller. Always have kids-sized scissors in there so we can practice cutting. A knife is fun, you know, a little plastic Play-Doh knife for kids who can't do the cutting piece. My favorite Play-Doh set, and you can get all kinds of little sets with that, but it has to be the barber shop, because you can put the hair inside the man, and you push the lever, and the man's hair grows, and that's always a big, big hit.
Which, by the way, is another one you can't get right now.
Even at Kroger?
I have looked in every Kroger in Greater Louisville. No, I'm sure they'll reissue it because that is a, yeah, I think it was out and now it's been pulled. And no, they don't. They have some kind of like that, but nothing is cool. I'm waiting for the latest and greatest.
The barbershop set, yeah, it's pretty cool. And I have had more than one of those. It does tear up, so it is something you're going to want to play only with adult supervision, but that's a fun toy if you can get it, because the gag of the hair growing, you know, kids love that. They just think that's hysterical. And I always try to be kind of creative when I'm making Play-Doh things with kids. You know, all kids can make snakes and balls, and that's always a lot of fun, but I make birthday cakes, and we make a little candle and then sing happy birthday, and that's always kind of a fun thing to do. In the winter, I make snowmen with Play-Doh. What kinds of things do you make that would be different than that?
Oh, I've done ice cream cones.
Oh, that's a good one. If you have kids that don't want to eat the Play-Doh.
Right, yeah, you don't want to make it too enticing. I have a little thing that makes French fries. That's kind of a hit.
Yeah, and again, if they're not eaters, one of my favorite stories, and this little boy that I'm going to talk about was 2 in 2002, so what would they make him now, 8? But his first sentence to me, you know, when we used to have our playgroup program in our office, I would say, Sam, don't eat the Play-Doh. Don't eat the Play-Doh. And one day he just screams out, I want eat Play-Doh. I want eat Play-Doh. And that just... Every time I play with the Play-Doh, I think about Sam, I want eat Play-Doh. I want eat Play-Doh. And he did a four-word sentence, and I was thrilled. I still didn't let him eat the Play-Doh, but I was thrilled.
Yeah, it's the saltiest stuff, but there is always a handful of kids who like to eat it. I don't know what it is, but...
But kids who are really tactile sensitive, who don't want to touch the Play-Doh, I almost always... provide rollers and cutters and other things so that we can still play with the Play-Doh and not be really scared of it or freak out about it, but you can still kind of work them into touching the Play-Doh and using it if you start out with some accessories where you don't really have to touch it.
Yeah, very much. Or hiding things in Play-Doh can be another good activity where they're encouraged to touch it, but not necessarily. So a lot of kids really take some time to get used to that squishy, gooey, you know, texture of Play-Doh.
Yeah, and if you have a kid who's a smeller, but, you know, who routinely smells everything, and we talked about that during our sensory processing shows, but they are tactile sensitive, this is a way that you can really get them to really play with some different things, because Play-Doh has such a strong smell. When I smell Play-Doh, it, you know, smell is the sense that's most linked to memory. So I, you know, think about my kindergarten Sunday school class and, you know, how that Play-Doh smells. So, again, if you have a smeller who's still kind of tactily aversive to some things, Play-Doh is a great way to kind of work on that. Markers are another thing that I'll use from time to time, but I always use washable ones. And most often I use the backs of my progress notes, but giant sheets of paper, that's always a lot of fun. And I invariably, when a parent tells me they're doing this, I'll say, what are you working on with them? And they'll say, well, I'm drawing a letter, and have them tell me what kind of letter it is. Don't do letters and numbers. Draw stuff. Draw a choo-choo. Look at, you know, draw a flower. Draw a car. Draw circles and call them balls. But don't get so stuck on shapes and letters when you're doing that kind of thing.
I've had a lot of kids like I draw candy. And a lot of times I'll just do dots of different colors, and then I pretend to eat.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think that's funny. We have 30 seconds.
Okay, the other ones that are left, threading or stringing sets, and again, don't get hooked up in saying block and ball unless that's all your kid can say. Sometimes you can find great sets like that at Walmart or another, like, crafty store that might have people or little farm animals
uh-huh.
of different shapes. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. I'm not going to get on my soapbox about flashcards because I think I've talked about that a lot on this show. I absolutely do not use them with children unless I love them and unless a parent tells me that they wag them around and want to do them all the time because it is so darn boring and not functional. But if I do have a child that loves flashcards, I almost always hide them and then we find them around the room and do them. Or, you know how kids love to do things in and out, I'll find a bucket, especially like at Christmas time or Halloween or Valentine's, and cut a slit or a slot in the top, and we'll put the pictures in that way. So again, you want to, I wouldn't use flashcards with a young child unless it's something they absolutely loved. Books, I think we have talked about. We don't insist that children read books, but if you have a child that loves that, by all means use it. There's a little thing in Listen and Obey 1 that talks about a trick that I use with kids who don't want to do books. I'll have snack. We'll eat snack while we're looking at a book, and that hooks kids in a lot. And then, Kate, a trick you use all the time, if you're eating a snack and they're not really wanting to do anything with the book, you know, you'll say, let's find a kitty cat. Let's feed the kitty cat. Look, make the cat eat, you know, and you take your cheese ball or your cookie or whatever and make the picture, try to pretend to eat. And that's fun, and that hooks kids in that might not necessarily want to do a book.
Right. I guess I like the simple concepts. You're ratcheted up, and then include action in your play, and that's really all I'm kind of doing with that book. Is
right.
Making it more animated and more action-packed. And so, I mean, I've done all kinds of goofy things with books trying to. And are we going to read it? No. But, hey, if they're sitting and looking and listening to what I'm labeling things, trying to feed them is a good one. Or wiping their noses or, you know, whatever. Hiding them under a little tissue that we're calling a blanket. Or
right.
Because
or
it's action-packed and they like it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do the whole kiss the dog, kiss the baby, kiss the whatever. And kids like that whole kissing thing, too,
mm-hmm.
where they're reaching down to kiss the right one that you've said. And the last kind of category that I have in this article is music. And the only CD that I recommend with any regularity is the Time to Sing CD. And this has such a good backstory. There's a dad who had an apraxic son, and he was so sad because his son could never sing with all the children's CDs because the songs were too fast. And even on some toys, like you'll get a farm toy and it's playing Old MacDonald, and I try to sing it, and it's, oh my gosh, it's so fast I can barely do it. You know, Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. You know, I can't even say that, much less the language delayed child that we're working with. So the great thing about this CD is it's beautiful orchestral music, and it's very, very slow so that a child could sing with that. It's almost too slow for you.
I was going to say, I'm going to try and bite my tongue. It is almost funny slow. You know, the wheels on the bus. But you could have fun with the slowness, too, you know, walking around in slow motion as you were doing the motions. I think kids would probably enjoy that. I've given that to kids, but I don't usually use it in a therapy session. So
I've used it some, but again, sometimes with older kids who are really working on trying to sing, or kids who go to preschool, and they know the songs, but you know, you can see on their little faces, oh my gosh, there's no way I could sing that. That's a great investment if you have a child in that situation. And we are done, and we've probably exceeded our time, but we got through our topic tonight. Yay!
Okay, I always end our thing with asking you a question, Laura. Do you get many kids on your caseload? Do you see a lot of apraxic kids, as in addition to, you know, lots of other language issues, but certainly apraxia is something you specialize in. Do you get many apraxic kids, and by that I mean, by definition, at least ideally, or whatever, mostly would include kids whose receptive skills are very good. They basically understand things at age level, but they don't use words at age level. So they're very their expressive language are very delayed. Do you get many of those kids who are very good at pretend play?
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah. But you know what it is a lot of times? I think that they are almost so defeated that sometimes they don't even try until I start to really introduce it, or a parent might not have really tried to play with them in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So you almost have to kind of start with the really basic stuff and work itself up. Sometimes kids' motor planning, you know, apraxia really is a motor planning problem, and so sometimes they can't sequence activities and play well enough to be able to pretend play yet.
Mm-hmm.
And our friend Pam, that's an OT, really taught me a lot about that, about, well, the reason that he's not pretending very much is because he can't sequence these actions. And You know, he can't hook the trains together, and then he can't keep the trains on the track to drive it into the station, and then he can't always get the door open and closed enough to do that. So I do think that sometimes there are global motor planning problems or global dyspraxia that causes some of those kids not to be able to do that. What were you going to say? You don't think you do?
Okay, I've had some. I will say it does seem to me that a lot of pretend play is fairly language-based. You know what I mean?
Right.
Let's say
yeah.
this, that being able to talk certainly makes it more pleasurable and engaging
right.
if you have words to sustain it and to enhance what
Keep
you're
it
doing.
Going. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wondered, you know, you see kids who are probably...
Just apraxic.
Right.
Yeah.
I have seen some, but you certainly see a lot more, and I just wondered, have you had many who... I've had some who were very good, at, even though... They weren't didn't have many words at all. They understood it and they really enjoyed it and would do it for long periods. But more often than not, because they don't have the words, it kind of leaves them flat because they can't, you know, talk.
Can't move it along. The
right.
other thing that I might have with kids with apraxia is they also are also have some sensory issues. So those are high activity little boys.
Mm-hmm.
And so they may not do a lot of pretend play because you can't get them to sit still long enough.
Right.
So that's kind of the other side of that. And with that, you know, you just really work them up and, you know, do all the movement activities, you know, that we talked about a few weeks ago, kind of in between that pretend play. And I might do a movement activity in the middle of that kind of pretend play and then go back to that same thing that we were doing before.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of get at it that way. That was a good observation, good question. Okay.
I wondered. I always like to, you know, learn something as we do the show. So not that I didn't learn anything through the show, but I always have these thoughts. I wonder what she thinks about this. So.
Well, thank you for asking.
You're
I
welcome.
Appreciate it.
Have a good Thursday night.
You too. Talk
okay.
to you later. Bye.
Bye.